orbit, Voznesensky thought. Reed sat back on one of the midship benches. Voznesensky wondered about the Englishman. He is here with us out of a sense of guilt. He wants to atone for the accident with the vitamins. Will he be a positive help to us, or will he just get in our way? He doesn't know how to drive the rover. He has no real experience in EVA. I doubt that he has been outside the dome more than a few hours total since we landed. What good will he be in an emergency? The Russian turned in the cockpit seat and looked over his shoulder at Reed. The physician seemed lost in thought, dazed almost, as he leaned back on the bench, both hands gripping its edge. Voznesensky shook his head, then immediately regretted it. He still felt woozy and terribly weak. "Having my own private physician aboard has done nothing to improve my health," he grumbled to himself. Voznesensky turned his attention back to Ivchenko. Studying the fellow, he realized for the first time that Ivchenko looked decidedly un-Russian. He was as lean as a willow, and his hair was a thick, curly thatch of midnight black. His eyes were coal dark, too. A thin, aquiline nose and even thinner lips. His complexion was pale, bloodless white, although Voznesensky thought that he would tan to a deep brown if he could get some sun on him. "He is younger than I am," Voznesensky thought, envying the energy that radiated from the cosmonaut's taut, wiry frame. "Younger and healthier." Voznesensky's head thundered. His arms and legs ached miserably. "If Reed is right, these vitamin doses ought to be helping. But I certainly don't feel any better, perhaps worse." "Tell me, Dmitri Iosifovich," Voznesensky said aloud, his voice sounding harsh and strained even in his own ears. "Where did you get such good looks?" The younger man glanced at him, almost startled, then quickly turned back to his driving. "My mother is Armenian, if that's what you mean," Ivchenko replied. "Ah, I wondered. I thought perhaps you had some Turkish blood in you." Ivchenko's nostrils flared. "No, Armenian." "I see," said Voznesensky. "And how is your love life up there in orbit?" Ivchenko's grin returned. "Adequate, comrade. Quite adequate. Especially when that German physicist gets bored with her work. Diels, the blonde? She is teaching me things about physics that I never knew before." "The quest for knowledge is never ending," Voznesensky agreed. "A worthwhile goal." Voznesensky started to laugh, but it made his chest hurt. He ended up coughing. "You are in pain, Mikhail Andreevich?" "It's nothing, just a little agony." "Do you want to turn back?" "No," Voznesensky thundered. "We go onward. No matter what happens, we go onward." Hours passed. They stopped the rover briefly and changed seats so that Voznesensky could drive. Ivchenko watched him carefully, though. The younger cosmonaut had no great desire to allow his older comrade to get them both killed. "At sundown, you can take over again," Voznesensky said, feeling perspiration beading his face, trickling along his ribs, plastering the back of his coveralls against the seat.
"You will sleep then?"
"I will try."
"The safety regulations forbid operating the rover unless a backup driver is awake and prepared to take over in case of an emergency. And operating at night..."
"I know the regulations quite thoroughly," Voznesensky snapped. "I helped to write them. This is an emergency situation. We will bend the rules a little."
"A little," Ivchenko murmured,
jabbing a thumb over his shoulder. "If you get lonely while I sleep, you can have our physician to keep you company." Ivchenko made a sour face. Across the rubble-strewn plain they drove, south by east, the dwarf sun lowering toward the rugged horizon, throwing long, blood-red shadows from every rock on the barren desert. To Voznesensky, the shadows looked like the lean claws of dead men's hands reaching for him. Back in the midsection of the command module, Tony Reed felt every bump and dip of the rover as he sat gripping the edge of the bench with both hands. This is madness, he told himself. Why did I ever talk myself into coming out here? Penance? This is carrying expiation for one's sins a bit too far, really. But he stayed silent, uncomplaining, trying to hold down the fear that was building up inside him. We're out in the middle of the empty Martian plain in this piddling little vehicle. If anything goes wrong, anything at all, we're all dead men. Up in the cockpit, the comm unit buzzed. Ivchenko turned it on, and Dr. Lee's long, sallow face appeared on the screen. His mouth curved downward. His eyes looked weary, defeated.
I have spent half the day arguing with Kaliningrad,
Lee said, his voice hoarsely rasping.
The mission controllers are adamant.
Vosnesensky grunted, but kept the rover moving forward.
They insist that the crew in the dome must be evacuated to orbit, and only afterward can an attempt be made to rescue the team in the rover.
Have you told them that we are already on our way to the canyon?
Lee slowly shook his head.
No. I told them that we do not agree either with their assessment of the situation or their decision.
Yet they still insist?
Yes.
So what do you intend to do?
The expedition commander tugged nervously at one end of his mustache.
It is my duty to command you to turn around and return to the dome so that you can carry out the orders from mission control.
Very well, Vosnesensky said. You have done your duty.
He reached across the control panel and turned off the communications unit. Then he slowed the rover to a halt. Ivchenko was looking at him worriedly.
You're going to turn around?
Heaving a great, pained sigh, Vosnesensky said,
Don't be an idiot. You drive for the next 2 hours while I nap. If we go all night, we could reach the canyon rim by midday tomorrow.
Oliver Zeman stared at the comm screen. He sat alone in the command section of the dome. Most of the others were down sick. Dr. Yang was in the infirmary, running still more tests. Zeman scratched his head, thinking furiously. He had not expected a crisis of command. Dr. Lee's image on the screen looked pained, tortured. He must be spending all his time right there in the command module, Zeman thought. He must be living there, night and day. He looks almost as bad as the scurvy cases.
We have a very difficult situation on our hands,
Lee said to the astronaut,
and I want to be certain that you are fully aware of all the implications.
Yes, sir, said Zeman almost eagerly.
Mission Control has issued an order to abandon the dome and return the entire base crew here to orbit,
Lee said.
But the rover team...
Lee raised a long, slim finger to silence the astronaut. He continued.
Kaliningrad reasons that we must think of the health and safety of the greatest number first. They are prepared to abandon the base and evacuate everyone in the dome.
Zeman swiftly thought, That means I'll have to pack them aboard the LAVs myself, 8 of us counting me. Can't fit that many in a single LAV. Who in hell's going to pilot the second vehicle? Miranov and Abel are in no shape for it, and Dmitri's off with Vosnesensky and Reed.
After the contingent from the dome is safely in orbit,
Lee was saying,
and we have all the astronauts and cosmonauts here, we can use the final landing ascent vehicle to attempt to rescue the 4 in the rover.
Then you want Vosnesensky to turn back, Zeman said.
I have ordered him to do so. He has refused.
Refused? A burning jet of fear shot through Zeman. A man can't refuse to carry out orders. That's crazy. The whole mission could fall apart if we don't follow orders. Lee waited a moment for his words to register with Zeman. Then he said,
Vosnesensky has tied my hands. I cannot order the evacuation from the dome with only one healthy astronaut present there. I cannot send Tolbukhin and Klein down to you because that would use the last remaining lander. It would mean abandoning the team.